Yes, yes, yes. Actually, I have this belt for two reasons. First of all, if you were here for the Super Bowl, I want you to know that the official count was Brian Tome 3, Chuck Mingo 5. So I just want you to know that. But actually, the reason I have this belt is because this whole series in wrestling has got me really taking a trip down memory lane. And when I was a kid, I was obsessed with WWF wrestling. I mean, anybody remember Hulk Hogan eating raw eggs in a blender? Like, what was that about? You know, Macho Man Randy Savage? Well, you know, he was constipated his whole career. I mean, just incredible. Constipated for his whole career. Coco Beware? Any Coco Beware fans? Hey, have you heard? Doing the bird? I mean, like, I was so hooked on wrestling, so much so that every time it showed up at the Spectrum, I would go down there. So I personally saw Hulk Hogan slam Kamala. I saw that with my own eyes. And my friends and I were so hooked on wrestling that we would go home and we would take cardboard boxes and we would cut them out. And then we'd take mom's aluminum foil and we would make belts like this one. We'd make our own wrestling belts. And it actually gets worse. It actually gets worse because we would then go over to each other's houses. It would be scheduled and we would actually wrestle for the belts. So everybody had their belts. And as a matter of fact, I have this one because I'm still the Intercontinental Champion. I don't think I ever lost that one when I was a kid. So just absolutely loved wrestling. And I thought, you know, taking that trip down memory lane, it'd be kind of cool to show you guys a picture of what I look like when I was absolutely obsessed with wrestling. So I called my parents and they helped kind of get this in here in time so I could show. Here's a picture of me back in my wrestling days. Lee Haney. So yeah, I am absolutely hooked on wrestling. And in this series, folks, we are going to be wrestling. We're going to be wrestling with major heavyweight objections that people have to faith in God. You know, when I interact with people who are thinking about whether or not Jesus was who he said he was and thinking about whether they want to order their life according to the Bible, I find that there are heavyweight objections that are very common in many people's minds. I would even go so far as to say people who have already said yes to Jesus and may even identify as a Christ follower still wrestle with these big objections. Big objections like, how does God, being loving, reconcile suffering in the world? That's one we're going to be dealing with because that's a major heavyweight objection. How can Jesus make these exclusive claims that he's the only way to God? What's that about? What's that about? We're going to be dealing with that. Talking about hell. If there's a gracious God, how can he send people to hell? And we're going to be wrestling with that one. Science versus faith, evolution versus creation. How do those jive? Are they actually in conflict or maybe they're not in conflict? What's that all about? And then finally, the Bible has a lot to say about sexuality, and we're going to be dealing with that and dealing with how that lines up against maybe our cultural norms right now, how it lines up against maybe things that we've believed and held as deep, deep beliefs for a long time. We're going to be wrestling with heavyweight objections. And the reason we're wrestling is because we want to move toward truth. And I'll say this over and over again. I truly believe that if there is a God, that God is found where truth is. Where you find truth, you will find God. And that's what we're going to be doing in this series, is wrestling toward truth. So let's pray before we go any further. God, I do actually believe that you exist. And I believe that you want to engage with us in a relationship. And I believe that you are where truth is. And so because I believe those things, I ask that not just today, but over the course of the next 6 weeks, we would wrestle with you. And in wrestling, we would find ourselves understanding more about who you are, more about who we are, and more about the truth that you call us to live in our lives. And I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. So if you are a note taker, if you're like, you know, you bring your journal or maybe you just use up your program, you're going to love this series. Love this series. We are going to be engaging our brains, going to be a lot of kind of informational things that we'll be talking about to really get to some of these core issues. You got to be willing to wrestle. So I just want you to kind of lean forward on that. No, we're going to be engaging. Today, we're going to start by talking about the place of doubt in a faith journey. Is it possible? Is it actually possible to get to a place where you believe 100% everything, you're absolutely certain, and you actually don't have any more doubts? And let me just be right up front. No. No, I think that there is absolutely a place for doubt in the faith journey. I think it's essential. I know no one who I would look at and say they have a deep relationship with God, that they're in a place of growing faith. I don't know anybody in that situation who hasn't wrestled and continue to wrestle with real, honest doubts. Everybody has doubts. Everybody has doubts. And I think it's important to know this isn't just the dirty underbelly of following Jesus. Atheists have doubts. Muslims have doubts. Buddhists have doubts. It doesn't matter your religious persuasion. Everybody has doubts. Bertrand Russell was a 20th century philosopher. I've been reading a lot of his stuff. He wrote a very, very challenging essay to me called Why I Am Not a Christian. He was an atheist. And one of the things that he was asked one time is, are you willing to die for your atheist beliefs? To which he responded, of course not. After all, I may be wrong. I may be wrong. And, you know, I'm sure he probably was saying that tongue in cheek, but I think there's an intellectual honesty that he's modeling in that statement of saying, I'm not saying I'm 100% certain. What I'm saying is, for him, evidence was lining up that there was no God, and that's where he based his life. He was basing his life on that, but he was willing to be honest enough to say, yeah, I have doubts. There's things that are unanswered. I have doubts. Tim Keller is a Christian preacher, theologian, preaches in a church in New York City. Just really respect this guy. This is what he says about doubts in a Christian context. He says, a faith without some doubts is like a human body without any antibodies in it. People who blithely go through life too busy or too indifferent to ask hard questions about why they believe as they do will find themselves defenseless. That's a good word for us. That's a good word for us, particularly even those of us who may have grown up in church all of our lives. But regardless of where you are, what he's saying is there needs to be a wrestling. There needs to be a place for doubt because it's through doubts that our faith actually gets strengthened. Doubts are doorways to truth. They're doorways to trust. And if you don't wrestle with your doubts, if you just blindly believe, one of the worst things you can do in this series is just take everything you hear up here at face value and don't wrestle for yourself. It's the worst thing you can do. This series will be of no use to you if you do that. But if you're willing to be provoked to maybe hear things that are different than what you believe and then actually continue to wrestle with God, continue to wrestle with maybe some of the Bible verses that we talk about here, wrestle with some of that stuff, you will grow. And in the absence of that, your faith will be shipwrecked. All it'll take is one tragedy, one time when God doesn't show up the way you think he should for you to say, I don't know if I can believe it all. And what Tim Keller is saying and what I believe is we have to have a place for wrestling in our experience of faith. Because for me, I know there are still some doubts that I have. I do not have it all figured out. One of the real doubts that I'm wrestling with right now is how much of the future does God actually know? How much does he actually know? There are people who I know personally and respect on both sides of that question. People who say God knows all of the future. He knows the beginning from the end. And in fact, he's preordained all of these things that are going to happen. He's pre-planned it. He knows exactly what's happening in every element. And there are other people who believe Jesus is who he said he is, who believe and order their life according to the Bible, who says God only knows the future to the extent that the future is knowable. But he's given us as free will agents a freedom to affect how things play out. It's not like he's going to be caught off guard necessarily. They don't go that far in that argument, but they just say he knows the future to the extent that it's knowable, but there are certain things in the future that are not known because as free will agents, we do have real choice. I wrestle with that one. I don't know where I land on that one. I may be leaning one side or the other, but I don't know where I'm actually landing on that one. And that has implications on how I might think about suffering, you know, how I might process next week's message and all of that. And so I just say, I'm glad to know that when I wrestle with doubts like that, I'm in good company because all throughout the pages of the Bible, there are people who wrestled with the same doubts and other doubts. And I just look at that and recognize there's got to be a place for doubt in my faith journey because wrestling actually is a sign of maturity. Wrestling is a sign of maturity. In our last series called Grow Up, we talked about what we want. If we're following Jesus, we want the good stuff. We want what God has for us. And constantly we're told that as we grow up, as we mature, we experience more of the good stuff God has for us. Just a natural process of what maturity brings. And if we want that, there are means by which we can experience that. When we engage in community, when we engage in the Bible, when we engage in prayer and these other ways, we can actually experience more of what God has for us. And I would throw into that pot, when you engage your doubts, it's actually a sign of maturity as well. And it's a sign to get to a place where you experience more of who God is and more of who you are. And also, wrestling is a sign of relationship. I don't know if this is different in your house, but I find that the people in my house are the ones that I tend to argue with the most. Maybe I'm alone in that. You know, people I tend to have conflict with the most are those that I'm closest to. My wife and I, we have conflict. You know why? Because her choices and where she's trending on things has a direct implication in my life. And where we don't see eye to eye, there will be conflict. And we wrestle. We need to be able to wrestle with each other on those issues. People I work very closely with, where our work is tied together, where what I'm doing affects what they're doing and vice versa, I find that there's conflict in those relationships because there's an investment. There's a relationship there. And it's no different in our relationship with God. If God is relational, and I believe he is, then there's going to be a place for wrestling. But what I want to talk about today is the fact that there is a difference between wrestling with your doubt and wallowing in your doubt. And I think what we're called to do is wrestle, but we're not called to wallow in our doubts. And so how do we differentiate that? I think we need some rules of engagement. Some rules of engagement, and I find these rules of engagement in a bunch of places in the Bible, but just a really distillation of them shows up in a powerful interchange between Jesus and one of his closest friends, a guy named Thomas, a guy who actually throughout history has gotten the name Doubting Thomas. Doubting Thomas, because he doubted. He doubted. And this is an experience that happens late in the story of Jesus on the earth, and it shows up in the book of John. And in John chapter 20, it says this. Now Thomas, called Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it." And so some context of where this is in the story. Several days before, Thomas saw Jesus get crucified. And crucifixion was a very, very painful and also very effective means of death. You didn't beat a crucifixion, you died. And so he saw Jesus die, and he saw them nail nails into his hands, and he saw them stick a spear at one point in his side, and it says that water was flowing out. And so what that meant was his lungs were filling up with fluid, and he died. Jesus died. He basically drowned in his own fluid in the crucifixion as he was losing blood as well. And so Thomas was like, "I saw him die, and I don't know about you guys, but last time I checked, the death rate was hovering right around 100%, and people don't tend to come back from that." And so he's saying, "I understand that we've been walking with Jesus for a long time. I know he talked about this thing called rising from the dead, but man, if I don't see it for myself, I will not believe." And what's interesting to me is how Jesus responds to the doubter, how Jesus interacts with Thomas, because the story goes on to say a week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed." And then he says to Thomas, and I believe he's actually saying this to us through this story, "Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe. And the question is, well, how do you do that? How do you get to a place of believing what you can't see? And I think it's that there are rules of engagement that you apply to your doubts. Three of them. First is this: you have to respect your opponent. You have to respect your opponent. You have to recognize that doubts are legitimate. We all have them, and we need to respect them. I think we also need to be honest about what doubt really is. You know, we think of doubt as a sign that there is a lack of faith in something. You doubt it because you have an absence of faith. And actually, I would say doubt is actually the opposite. Doubt is evidence that you have faith. You just have faith in the opposite of the thing you're doubting. You have an alternate belief. So for those of us who wonder, and it's a very legitimate question, how can Jesus say he's the only way to God? How can that be true? In stating that, we're not just stating a doubt, we're actually stating what we believe. What we believe is that there are multiple ways to God. That's a place of faith. And so in questioning the exclusive claims of Jesus, which is very legitimate, and I encourage you to do that, just recognize you're not coming to it neutral, you're coming to it because you believe the opposite. And you believe there are multiple ways to God. That's a place of faith, and we need to respect that. That's really where we're coming from. Thomas was coming from a perspective of, in my life experience, no one has beaten death. And so when he's doubting the claim that Jesus rose from the dead, he's actually saying that because he believes the opposite. Nobody beats death. You know, for those of us who wrestle with suffering and how can an all-powerful and all-loving God allow suffering in the world, let's just respect the fact that by stating that, we're actually stating that we believe that if there's a God who is all-powerful and all-suffering, and all-knowing and all-loving, there would be no suffering in the world. We believe that, and that's why we wrestle with the fact that maybe in the Bible it seems like God says he's powerful and says he's loving, but in the world we see suffering. Just respect the opponent, and that's a great place to be. Just to be where you are. You know, I talked a couple weeks ago about being in a spiritually dry place. For me, just the recent months have really been a difficult place of feeling very distant from God, not feeling connected to God, not experiencing him in ways that maybe I did before. And one of the things that was encouraging is when I mentioned that on the weekend, I got several emails from folks in the community, just, you know, words of encouragement. Hey, I've been there. Hang in there. Those kinds of things. And it was really encouraging to get those kinds of words, because one of the toughest things for me in the midst of that dry place was simply to be comfortable being there. Just get comfortable and recognize I can't rush through this. I can't fake my way through this. This is really where I'm at. And so when I would interact with people who were wanting to know more about God, I just needed to be honest. When they asked, well, how are you doing spiritually? Man, I'm really distant right now. I needed to be honest about that. When I would be teaching, I needed to just be honest and say, hey, you know what? There's some things that I'm saying that I'm not feeling right now. I'm not feeling them right now. And I needed to be even honest with God. I needed to be willing to say, God, you know what? This morning, I'm supposed to be spending time with you, and I really don't want to. Because I'm feeling distant. I'm feeling disconnected. I just needed to be comfortable being where I was. And I think that's what it looks like to respect your opponent of doubt. Just be where you are. You know, I think there are two kinds of people when it comes to doubt. I think there are people who honestly have never had a faith experience, and they're coming to this experience of who God is, who Jesus is, with legitimate questions, and that's a great place to be. I think there are others who have grown up in it and never questioned anything. And honestly, I think that's a difficult place to be. That's not a healthy place to be. You have to be willing to respect the fact that you have doubts, your doubts are legitimate, and God is not afraid of your doubts. So you shouldn't be afraid of your doubts. You need to respect your opponent. Second thing, though, is we need to fight fair. We need to fight fair. See, wallowing is not fighting fair. Wallowing is jumping out of the fight. And if you're wrestling, then you're going to fight fair. And there's a way to know the difference. There's a way to know the difference. I think about our culture and how many times we like to talk about being open-minded. Open-mindedness is a compliment. Anybody who tells you you're open-minded, we always take that as a compliment. Nobody wants to be known as a closed-minded person. But man, if you've had a staunch objection to faith, but you've not been willing to engage in disconfirming information, you are a closed-minded person. Open-minded people are willing to wrestle with doubt. It doesn't matter where you're starting from, but are you willing to pursue disconfirming information and wrestle with the opposite? Man, I have to be willing to wrestle with things that disconfirm what I believe about the Bible. I need to be willing to engage in people who are well-educated, have well-reasoned thoughts, and think exactly the opposite of I do. If I don't do that, I am a closed-minded person, and God's not challenging me to be that way. God is actually fine with me engaging in that way. That's healthy for my growth. And so we have to be willing to fight fair. I also think that sometimes doubt is used as a mask. It's not that doubt's really our issue. Sometimes disobedience or just an inability to want to follow the truth that we know, that's really what we're struggling with. I think it was Mark Twain who said, I don't have a problem with the parts of the Bible I don't understand. It's the parts I do understand that I have a problem with. You know? It's the part that says, love your enemy and do kindness to those who hate you. That's the part I don't like. And sometimes we say, well, I doubt that that's actually what Jesus meant when he said that. So, and that's not a doubt issue. We don't want to follow that. You know, the Bible has certain guidelines around sex and sexuality. And so for some of us, it's not an issue of doubting whether or not that's exactly what it meant and looking at original languages. That's not really our issue. We don't like the answer. We don't like the answer. And so we will constantly doubt with the validity of it. It's not really a doubt issue. It's that we don't like the answer. Because if this is true, it has implications on our life. It has implications on our choices. We look at what the Bible has to say about giving and generosity and how we should approach material things in this world. And you know what? if it's opposite of the way we think, if it's, you know, we might be people who are wired to work, and we're wired to work because we want to consume and we want to collect as much as we can. And when the Bible starts talking about things like giving some of it away, we just say, maybe that's an Old Testament thing. I don't know if that actually applies to how I need to live my life. That's not a doubt issue. That's a rebellion issue. We don't want to live under the truth that we see. And we all have those areas. You know, for me, it was very humbling and convicting and a lot of other ing words to have this dry spell and recognize there were legitimate questions I think I was asking God. God, are you really good? That was a legitimate question. It's fine to ask that question. But I just had to admit that in the midst of asking those questions, I kept coming across these pockets of rebellion in my own heart. These pockets of, you know what, God, whatever your answer is, if you don't do this particular thing, why should I follow you? If you don't do it this particular way, why should I trust your goodness? You know, in those places in my life, that's not a God issue, that's a me issue. That's my own rebellion, and I can't use doubt as a mask for the things that I'm just really wrestling with. This is why I think the way Jesus responds to Thomas is so powerful. So powerful, because the interesting thing is, Jesus is willing to engage the doubters. He's willing to engage the doubters. He goes to Thomas, he appears to him, and he says, Thomas, if it's going to take you actually putting your finger in the holes where the nails were in my hand, man, go ahead and do it. Go ahead and do it. Thomas, if you need to put your hand in my side where you saw the spear go in, man, go ahead and do that. And what I see in that is a heart that I really believe God has toward doubters. I want you to hear this. God is way more interested in winning you than he is in winning an argument with you. He's way more interested in winning relationship with you than he is in being right and winning an argument with you. Jesus is not, you know, Jesus doesn't come to Thomas and do the Donald Trump. You're fired, you know? He doesn't come to him and say, how dare you? Everybody else who you've been following and hanging out with for 3 years told you I was alive. And you won't believe it, Thomas? I'm done with you. You're dead to me, Thomas. You're dead to me. Jesus doesn't do that. Jesus doesn't do that. He engages the doubters because he's way more interested in winning you than he is in winning an argument with you. And so we just have to be willing to fight fair too. If that's the posture that God has, that he's wherever truth is, God is. So I don't think God ever is threatened by our seeking of truth. But man, we've got to be willing to adjust our lives when we find truth. We've got to be willing to not wallow in our doubt, but actually wrestle to a place where truth can impact and change our lives. So if we want to engage in doubt, great. If you want to wrestle, great. But let's respect our opponent and let's fight fair. And then one more thing, we need to acknowledge the winner. We need to be willing to acknowledge the winner when the winner comes. Thomas, after he gets the evidence, what he says next is so powerful. He says, my Lord and my God. He makes basically a declaration of faith. And that declaration has two parts to it. He calls Jesus God because anybody who beats death has to be God, has to be divine. And that's what he recognizes. So in that moment, he's saying, you're God. You are God. But the other word he calls him is actually the one that's more profound as we wrestle with doubts. Because he says, not only are you God in a general sense, a general deity, but you are my Lord, my master. That was a declaration of total surrender. He was laying down his life. He was laying down everything, even in the midst of things he might have doubted. He was laying down his life as a servant of Jesus because Jesus was not just God to him. At that point, he recognized he was also Lord. He had claim to his entire life. See, Thomas said that in a culture where people had lords, where people had the title Lord. And when you were a Lord over someone else, you had the right to dictate everything about that person's life. You could dictate how they spend their time. You could dictate what they did for a living. You could dictate the food that they ate and when they ate it. You could dictate where they went and when they went there. And Thomas was basically saying, now that I've been confronted with truth, I surrender. I give up. I lay down everything. You're my Lord. You're my Lord. You have right to my life. That's what it looks like to acknowledge the winner. It looks like in our relationships, as we come to a place of understanding that the Bible is valid and the Bible is true, we no longer let our preferences dictate how we read the Bible. We let the Bible dictate our preferences. my Lord and my God. We don't let how we think about our material things dictate how we spend our money, but we let the Bible dictate how we spend our money. My Lord and my God. You know, for some of us, we're at the very beginning of a seeking process. And I'm not expecting that today you're going to go with me all the way to the point of saying Jesus is God. I'm not even saying that that's in the realm of possibility for you today. I know there are some people, you've got to wrestle with that one. And that's a legitimate wrestle. Legitimate wrestle. And it may be years before you come to that point. If you come to that point, maybe years from now. But you know what? Along the way, you may come across truth. You may come across other things in the Bible, or you may come across other things you see being practiced in communities of faith. And you just look at it, and you have to be honest and say, you know what? Man, I've tried to do life on the other side of that principle, and it doesn't work. And I would say, even in the midst of what you don't know about God, when you come across that kind of truth, bend your life to it. Bend your life to it. This is the way you wrestle toward truth. This is the way you wrestle toward God. For those of us who've been following God a long time, you know, maybe you're in a place right now where because of a situation or any reason, you might have very legitimate doubts. I think we all have doubts throughout our faith experience. Maybe like me, you find yourself in a dry place. And what I would say is don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. It's okay to wrestle with doubts in particular areas, but man, still live the truth that you know. Still live the truth that you know. Doubting is not sinning. Doubting is not, you're not going to find a Bible verse that says doubting is sinning. Even in this one where Jesus is saying to Thomas, stop doubting and believe, he's saying that relationally to him. He's not saying that in terms of now everybody here, don't ever doubt. No. That's a relational command that he can give him because of what he's done for him. Doubting isn't sinning, and we just need to be willing to wrestle. And when we find truth, let's acknowledge the winner. I have two hopes. I have really two hopes for all of us in this series. The first is, I hope you will wrestle. I hope you'll wrestle. I hope you will think about, what is the major objection I have? What is the roadblock for me? What is the thing that I still just don't understand about God, about the way the world works, about what the Bible seems to be saying about this particular thing? I don't get it. I hope you'll wrestle with it. Because I really believe there's a reward in wrestling. There's a reward in that for all of us. There's a principle in Proverbs chapter 2 that kind of describes the seeking process really well. It says, indeed, if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. That's a principle. That's a principle. But what the principle calls for is having a fierce urgency for truth, pursuing truth with a fierce urgency. Have you ever pursued anything in your life with a fierce urgency? I tell you, right now, I am pursuing riding a motorcycle with a fierce urgency. I just am. I got a motorcycle, and it's an old one. I got to get the thing fixed. I'm already signed up for the basic rider's course. I stayed up at midnight last week after the Super Bowl. I stayed up at midnight so I could be one of the first people to apply for this class because it gets filled really quickly. I am demonstrating a fierce urgency towards getting on this bike. And what I would say is, if I'm willing to stay up till midnight, reorient my schedule to ride a motorcycle, how much more to pursue truth? How much more for life-altering truth should I be willing to bend my schedule? How much should I be willing to bend who I hang out and spend time with? How much more should I be willing to read whatever I need to read, pursue whatever I need to pursue? Pursue it like gold, pursue it like silver, for the purposes, if there is a God, of having a fear of God and the knowledge of God. There's nothing more important. So we need to have a fierce urgency for truth. That's why I hope you'll wrestle. I hope you will wrestle. Because where truth is, that's where God is. I really believe that. And the second hope that I have is that at some point, your testing gives way to trusting. You know, in the Bible, the word faith is really a relational term. You know, when I think about faith, it's easy to think about it as, well, here are the list of things that I believe are true. Factual, objective kind of statements of truth that kind of line up with my belief system. And I do have that list. I've wrestled with this whole thing of the resurrection and whether I can actually take that as a valid historical fact. I've wrestled with that. You know, I've wrestled with other things of faith. I've wrestled outside of Christianity to wrestle with other principles that I see to come to places of saying, what do I believe about that? And so I have a list of things that I have a mental assent to, but that's only half of the story of my relationship with God. That's only half of the story of why I actually have faith in God. The other half, and probably for me the more profound half, the deeper half, is there's a relational faith. that I have in God. When you see the word faith in the Bible, oftentimes what it means is you are banking your life on the faithfulness of another person. In this case, banking your life in the faithfulness of God. The best picture I can give you for this principle is marriage. Marriage is a covenant. Marriage isn't a contract. You know, a contract says, if you do this, I'll do that. But in marriage, you are basing your life on the faithfulness of another person forever, till death do you part. For better or worse, for richer or poorer, you've been there. You've been at weddings. You know how it is. I'm basing my life on the faithfulness of a person. When I married my wife, now almost 9 years ago, I didn't know what she was going to do 10 years from then. I had no way of knowing. I had no way of knowing what she's going to do 20 years from now. I don't know whether she's going to honor that vow or not. I have no way of being 100% certain, but what I did know is I knew enough about her faithfulness to me to that point to base the rest of my life on that, to base the rest of my life on the faithfulness of Maria to honor these vows because she loved me, and she did the same. And that's what it means when we come to a place of faith in God. It's a relational faith too. It's a trusting in the faithfulness of God, even in the midst of questions we have about God. For me, there have been moments in my life where I've seen God's faithfulness in a relational way, and it's changed me forever. One was 3 years ago. 3 years ago, my wife and I were expecting our first child, and we were about 20 weeks into the pregnancy when we had a crisis, and she started having preterm labor, preterm contractions. And at that point, if you know anything about that process, at 20 weeks, they wouldn't have even tried to save the baby because the child is too underdeveloped and they just can't live outside of the womb at that age. And so we were facing this crisis of losing our first child if this thing had gone to fruition. And I remember them sending us home and saying, hey, just keep an eye on it, and here's some things to watch for. And sure enough, a couple days later, maybe it was a week later, my wife wakes me up in the middle of the night, and she's just in a lot of pain. And it's the contractual pain. And we called, and they were like, well, if it gets shorter and all, you know, all the stuff that they tell you, then you come in. And I just remember in that moment feeling so alone. I've never felt more helpless as a husband. Never felt more helpless as a husband. And one of the things that would help her is if you ran warm water and she would sit in the tub, it just kind of soothed it for her a little bit. And I remember going in the bathroom, middle of the night, turn on the water. And I just was like, God, I don't know where you are. I didn't have any articulate prayer. I wasn't saying our fathers. I wasn't saying anything. I just was like, God, I don't know where you are. And put the water on, and she got in the tub. And I just remember sitting on the floor next to my wife, holding her hand for what felt like hours. Probably was. It felt like eternity. It was hours. And I just remember sitting there, no words, not knowing what to say, feeling utterly helpless, wondering if God's faithfulness was totally a false thing. Just wondering, God, are you really faithful? And I remember my wife would just be sitting in the tub, and just the motion of when she would do this with her hands, it kind of just helped kind of create a wave, more of a soothing wave. And eventually, she felt like she was comfortable enough to go back to bed. Well, I wasn't. So I'm up, and it's the next morning. And that morning, I get a phone call. And the phone call was from a woman who knew me, but really didn't know me well. And she goes here to Crossroads, and she probably didn't even have our home number. I'm thinking she had to find it from someone. She probably found it from another staff person. But she had to make it her business to do that, she said, because she needed to tell me about a dream she had had last night. And she said, I had a dream about you and Maria and the baby last night. And in the dream, I saw what appeared to be angels' wings. And those angels' wings were fluttering in Maria's womb. And there was light in there. And I just got the sense that the baby was just being protected and that the baby was just comfortable. And I don't know if that means anything to you guys or not. She had no idea what we had just gone through the night before. No idea. But the very next morning, she calls me with this dream. And you can imagine when she starts talking about the angel wings and the fluttering and that motion, I'm losing it. I'm like, are you serious? Are you serious? And I started asking her some questions about, well, when did you wake up and all this? And it turns out she was getting this dream at the very moments we were in that bathroom wondering about the faithfulness of God. At the very moment. And I tell you that in that moment, when I got that phone call from her, my testing gave way to trusting. And we didn't get a guarantee that the pregnancy was going to be perfect. That wasn't the thing. What I realized in that moment, though, is when I was in my bathroom with my wife, feeling utterly helpless and utterly alone, the faithfulness of God had left me. He was right there with me. He was right there. Because God is not just a math equation to be figured out. He's not. You're going to come to a place where maybe there's a lot of things that will line up for you and you will still have some doubts. And I just want to tell you, even in the midst of your doubting, you can still believe because God is a being who wants to have relationship with you. Just like Jesus did to Thomas, the God that I'm talking about is a God that says, man, touch my hands. Touch my side. Touch my side. I'm way more interested in winning you than I am in winning this argument with you. And I just know that when you come to that place, if you've wrestled your way to that place, your testing can give way to trusting. And I'm hoping that happens for all of us in this series. If you came in and grabbed a program, go ahead and take that out. Go ahead and take out your program. And go ahead and open to the first panel. You'll see the heavyweight series. And under that, you'll see a statement. Write your question here. Just an empty box. I'm wondering, are there any people in here who wrestled in high school or college? Any wrestlers? Couple? Yeah, couple wrestlers. Well, I found it interesting this week. One of the things I thought I'd do in preparation for the series, just look at the rules of wrestling. Like, you know, how do you actually wrestle? What are some of the principles around that? One really struck me because what I found is, in a wrestling match, one of the ways that you can get points deducted, and it may even disqualify you, I'm not sure, is if at any point in the wrestling match, you step off the mat. There's a penalty for that. Now, if you get off, you know, if you're wrestling, you fall off the mat, that's different. But if you personally step off the mat after you've engaged, then you're disqualified. And you know what? It's interesting because I feel like that's what God is inviting us to do in this series. God is not expecting any of us to have it all figured out. God does not sweat your doubts, so you don't have to sweat your doubts. But I think what God invites us to is the same thing that Jesus was inviting Thomas to. Hey, are you willing to stay on the mat with me? Are you willing to wrestle? And if you are, what I want to do is while Robbie plays, I want you in the next couple minutes to write down what is your heavyweight objection. I want you to just actually write it down. There's a discipline. This is a way to just declare you're in, that you're going to stay on the mat. And so I just encourage you, take out a pen, and while he plays, think about in your seat, what is it for you? And go ahead and write down your objection. All right, go ahead and have a seat. Go ahead and have a seat. We're going to have a little cool-down period here. Kind of keeping the wrestling theme going. Couple quick things before we wrap up. First, you know, when I hear that song, there's a line in there that just keeps resonating with me this weekend. Help me believe. Help me believe. And it reminds me of another doubter. Another doubter in the Bible is a guy whose son was sick, and he comes to Jesus to heal his son. Jesus, can you heal my son? And Jesus responds to him, anything is possible for him who believes. But this guy's response to Jesus' statement is probably one of the most honest statements I've ever heard anybody say. He says, I believe, but help me with my unbelief. And man, I just say, that is a great posture to have in this series. Doesn't matter what's on this card. It doesn't matter what's on this card at all. It doesn't matter what your objection is. I want you to know, God is willing to help you with your unbelief. He's a relational God, and he wants to speak to you in that way. So I just encourage you with that. And I know that for some of us, maybe this is our first time here at Crossroads, or maybe you've just been coming for a couple months, and you're like, one of the things I doubt is what this place is all about. I'm not sure what's going on here. I come for Super Bowl, and I see all this crazy stuff. Now I come, and there's a wrestling ring. What's up? So if you have questions like that about Crossroads, Peter Zimmer's going to come up and give you some context for how you can get connected around here. So Peter, everybody, let's
how do you do today? Are you kidding me? Awesome. Yes, if you are newer, or kind of just have some more questions, Context Live is a great kind of forum to dig into kind of who we are, what we do, and why we do those things. And that is next Sunday at 1:00, so check that out. And then also, if you're kind of more interested in something that was said from stage this weekend or in previous weekends, kind of the new central place to get that info is crossroads.net/mentioned. If you'd like prayer as everyone leaves, just stay in your seat. We've got people on the prayer team that would love nothing more than just sit down with you and pray with you about some things. So that's it. Enjoy your week, guys. See you next week. Have a great time.
Thanks for coming.